Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, and welcome to the No Bullshit Guide to Life with me, Bangs, in London.
And me, Lamara, out in these streets in New York. What?
Wait a minute, I just lied, actually, because I'm not in London at all, am I? I'm not actually in London. That was a total lie.
I'm here. Tell people where you are, Bangs.
Hey, up. This is the No Bullshit Guide to Life, coming to you live from Yorkshire. I'm up in Leeds at the moment visiting my family, so I am not, in fact, in London. That was a lie. I'm sorry.
That was a lie. The paternity test said you.
Yeah, exactly. Big fat liar. That's me.
But before we kick into stuff, must explain where we've been for like a few weeks, off in La La Land, me personally, which has led to a bit of a drought of the shows, guys. And I apologise because I'm sure you've missed us and we've missed you. So for the past 2 weeks, yeah, we haven't been around, but remedying that, now we're back through your airwaves, on your speakers, through your headphones.
Yeah,
all of that. Bullet, more fire. Yeah. So we're back. And thank you for bearing with us with the absence and the silence. Boop.
Yay. So what's new in your world? What's happening?
Oh, there's a lot of good shit going on around here before I get into my actual good shit of what's going on around here. But generally, the world is looking good. We've had some sunshine, which, I mean, every week I must comment on the weather. I'm actually going to dive into the weather a little bit more. But it makes such a big difference. So New York is opening itself up in new ways. I think people are walking around with a bit more pep in their step. So all of the good shit over here. I've seen some good music, seen some good art. It's all good over here, fam. What about you?
Well, I've been sick for a week. I mean, you
the
know, life...
already.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah. Ben's like, turn it down a notch tomorrow.
I mean, life is beautiful and all of that. But not so much when you've got viral gastroenteritis, which I had for a week, which, if you're not familiar with what it is, it's just not pretty. I'm just going to leave it there. I'm just going to leave that hanging for you.
Exactly.
And if you were wondering if it's a good idea to teach for 5 spin classes within a 4-day period when you have that illness, I'm going to go ahead and let you know. It's not a good idea.
Not a good idea.
No, don't do it if you were thinking about it.
No. Don't say yes to life when you have an illness like that.
No, that's just...
It's okay to say no.
It's just trying to not let you be great, which is what happened to me. But, you know, spirits are high, but just body was like, computer says no.
My mind is telling me no.
Yeah.
I have to go there.
Well, no, my body was really telling me no. Like, the biggest way, my body was like, bitch, sit down. But apart from that, you know, glorious, glorious times. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Very lovely.
Somewhere in there is goodness.
Somewhere in there. I really had to really delve.
It's okay.
Deep.
It's all right to have a pessimistic. It's not even a pessimistic outlook. That's just some real talk. Like, yo, I was ill.
I was really sick.
Try to find the goodness in that.
You know, I was happy. My life was good, but just not like a little bit of the sheen was off it because
it weren't trying to let you live, bro.
No, it just felt like I was like walking underwater all week. You know what I mean? But anyway,
let's dive into it.
What would you like to call bullshit on this week?
Bangs.
Oh God. Okay. I'm preparing. No, myself.
I spoke out loud to myself. Lamara, can you call bullshit on this? And then I was like, yeah, because it's fucking annoying. I'm calling bullshit, right, on people that really invade your personal space. There's a caveat in that it's majority in public spaces. Now, don't at me, because I know people like, if you're out on road and someone's in your space, well, you're out on road and there's a million other people and you just got to deal with it. No. If you're sitting down on the subway, if you're, you know, standing as I was last night, like in, I was at concert, standing in this little nook behind something in the club. If you are in a line, right, very American now, Lamar, but in a line in a store, and someone
that's
is...
That's a queue in a shop for the English people. That's
I beg you translate.
Queue in a shop is what that was. Yes, continue.
I'm losing all my Londonisms. But if you are in one of those three spaces and there is someone so close to you that you can feel the breath of theirs on the back of your
head. Oh, that's not okay.
I'm standing in the corner and then I just became an extension of the wall for you to lean on. If you're sitting down on a train and you sit on half of my leg.
No.
On the train.
Excuse me, sir. No.
Excuse me.
No.
Stop.
Madam.
People invade your space in that way. And it made me think, like, I mean, like, the line thing is one thing. I'm just like, ease up off on it. And then those are the type of people that be like, are you waiting? What the fuck do you think I'm doing? No, I'm standing here for the good of my health. But particularly in the situation I was last night, I was like, you clearly don't see me. And then I got so frustrated. I'm like, I'm trying to enjoy the show, great show. But this chick is leaning on me like I'm an extension of the wall. And then she's flicking her hair and it's like on my nose. And I was like, Lamara, move. No, I was here for a reason. Like, I wanted this nook. And then it becomes that you're the awkward person to that person.
Yeah.
You're the agitator because you are now, like, making up a fuss because, oh, my God, like, you're in a public space. But it's not the point. She was in my space.
Yeah.
Like, I did some really, like, not even bullshit things. Like, you know, I'm just going to put my hands on my hip. Oh, and you're still touching me. And I'm going to turn to the side. And every time I turn to the side to decrease the space, it's like she enveloped it even more. I was like, this is a fuckery, really. So I'm calling bullshit on people who invade your personal space, albeit in public spaces. Just be more cognizant of who's around you. Like, if you're standing in the queue, don't go up if someone's behind or backside, as my dad says. Like, nobody's got time for that. Just be more aware. Like, cities are crowded, public spaces are crowded, but give that person a bit of breathing room. Like, so yeah, I'm calling bullshit on that because I can't handle long for man. Over to you.
I don't know if I fully call bullshit on it because I understand why people do it. But I do, or every time it happens, I do feel a bit of a pang of a like, really necessary? I don't think so. So basically just people rushing to have an opinion or make a judgment about something. Case in point, specifically what I'm referring to is things like Beyoncé's album dropping. Obviously, that's a massive body of work that took her probably months, maybe a year or so to put together. There's many layers to it. There's a lot happening. And so, no, I'm sorry. Your review that you released 7 minutes after the album came out, I don't think you could actually digest all of that material in that time. And just because you want to be the first person to say something on it, can you just chill? We're cool. We can wait. We're here. So just fully take something on board. The same thing when Prince died. Like,
rest in peace.
Rest in peace to my man Prince. But listen, how 2.5 minutes after the announcement was made, everybody and their mama's got some kind of obituary up on the man. And it's like, yeah, cool. But just, and also it kind of freaks me out that that's happening because was that pre-written?
Were you just waiting
for that to happen?
Published? Did you start writing it last
Seriously,
year?
Seriously, it does make me think that every time.
Is it insert name here?
Oh, honestly, okay. Yeah. You know, it kind of. And everybody, you know, and especially when it comes to people's deaths and things, wanting to be the first publication or whatever to announce it is all well and good. But what happens is you go ahead and do, you know, write these articles and make assumptions and claims and things with no evidence and nothing to back it up. And then that's when the rumor mill starts and things get all crazy and whatever. And, you know, just it spreads a whole bunch of manure that's just not true. So I think, yeah, I'm calling bullshit on this incessant need in this kind of internet era to be like the first at everything. Well, like that's basically just, you know, every freaking comment section on like popular blogs or Instagram feeds, there's always some asshole who gets in there and literally their comment is first. Like they're the first person who commented on something.
I see, you know, an Instagram post. Like, I'm like, okay, like, my G.
That's your life. You're just waiting to be the first person to comment on something. What, like, why? For why?
This is the thing as well. It's just like, I totally feel you shooting off the hip with opinions. I think I'd like to think I digest a bit more.
Right.
I read widely enough to like, okay, well, here's what I initially think. And then let me just go out and like, okay, that's cool over there, that's cool over here. Does that actually align with how I'm feeling? Oh, that's a new side of it. And then release my opinion to the world. You kind of got to let that shit simmer. It's like, yeah, exactly with that. The same things happen with Beyonce's album. The same things happen with Drake's album.
Yeah.
And like, I call bullshit on myself because I said to my group of guy friends, like, man, not really feeling views. They were like, listen to it a couple more times. Oh, right, now this is
right,
my jam.
Exactly, yeah.
But there's certain spaces which you can kind of like let that off. But when it's out on the big bad internet, like you are really putting your fork in the ground, like this is my opinion and this is it. This is the be all and end all. But you really got to let that shit simmer, man. Like it can't be a knee-jerk reaction. And I think a lot of the knee-jerk reactions, and we probably touch on it in our main topic today, can come back to bite you.
Mm.
A lot, right? Because you just haven't given it thought. You haven't understood the context in which you should view this. And you haven't shut the fuck up a little and let it simmer.
Completely. And I also think it kind of decreases people's ability for independent thought when everybody is trying to crowd the space with their opinion. Like, you know, there's other people who, like, listen, I've barely even listened to Lemonade at all. I kind of had a very brief listen, kind of skipping through the tracks type listen on Friday, but had literally no desire to do so until that point because I just couldn't bear to wade through all the bullshit. I haven't read any reviews. I didn't want to see anything about it because I want to make up my own mind, thank you. And also, you know, unless you're like really in the business and a trusted music journalist, you can go ahead and keep your opinion to yourself, really. Ain't nobody really caring about
like
it, let's be real.
Everyone and their mama,
everyone has an opinion, you know,
to say.
I'm not like, okay, that's a bit unfair.
Valid.
Yeah, you know, it's
well,
like,
no, you can say what you want to say,
you can have your opinion, absolutely, but it's just like,
is it,
you don't need to crowd the space with it immediately. Like, if you absolutely feel like you must have something to say, you have a responsibility, if you're going to put it in the public space, to make it something of substance. You know what I mean? Like, so as you said, do yourself a favor, sit back, listen to it, digest, listen to it again, and then form an opinion. And then if you feel the need to write something about it, awesome, great. Like, share that with the world. But I'm just kind of growing really weary of people's incessant need to just be first all the time. It's not that serious, dudes. Anyway, good shit. What do you call good shit on?
I'm calling good, incredible, great shit on Sunshine and Strolls. I know those two things in particular. Like I said, the weather was very decent in New York the week before last. We've had some rain since, but hey. And I'm seeing and hearing that London weather is looking too peng for life right now and all of that good stuff. So, like, good shit on getting yourself out, outside in whatever capacity you can, enjoying the sunshine and taking a stroll with it, be it with someone, on your own, taking a book to a designated place and having a read, like, walking with your coffee down a particular road or buy some water, like, good shit on sunshine and strolls because, listen, being a child that craves melanin, like, that is immediately good for all of me. Like, the minute the sunshine hits me, I'm like, yes, feel rejuvenated, I start to feel great again. So getting yourself out to the sunshine will do you a world of good, and then taking a stroll and perhaps being a little bit reflective or doing something dope at the end of it, I think will just ease and pleasure your mind a little bit more. So I'm calling good shit on sunshine and strolls, whether it be with someone, on your own, or whatever you want to do at the end of it. Just basically get outside, enjoy the sunshine when you can, because as we know, English people, the minute it turns, we're going to be the first ones to complain. So I call good shit on that, definitely.
I think that's a very good thing to call good, Sean.
Why, thank you. And over to you.
So, my good shit is, and again, I don't really know how to phrase it. I think I'm going to say, my good shit is parents appreciating the impact non-parents can have on their children.
Ooh.
Did that make sense?
Parents appreciating the impact non-parents can have. Yeah, I'm with it. I said it over.
So for context, there's a girl who I mentor, and I think I probably was talking about her a couple of weeks ago. I went out to dinner with her recently, and basically, to cut a long story short, I bumped into her dad, and her dad kind of gave me this really lovely little speech about how glad he is that I'm in her life, and that what a positive impact I've had on her, and how he's really glad that she has me to look up to and as a role model, and that it takes a village to raise a child. So he's, you know, I was kind of singing his praises as a father and what a great job he's done with her. But he was saying, but no, you know, people like you matter. People like you have had big influence in her life and have really impacted her. And I'm a non-mother by choice. I don't really have a desire to have children and never really have. And it's really touching when a parent acknowledges your worth and and in terms of the impact that you can have on their child. And I just think, I mean, I could talk about the decision to not have children till the cows come home, to be honest. But I think one of the things that is really important in every child's life is to have examples of especially women who are not mothers, so that they have examples of people to look up to where it's like, oh, that's another option. I don't have to have children. That's not the only option for me as a woman. So I think it's really important. Not that I'm all like, oh, I'm doing the world a massive favor by not having kids, although P.S. I am. But I just to throw that in there.
Side note, I'm doing the world a tremendous
side
favor.
Side note, it actually is like a big deal. But it's really lovely when parents acknowledge that, you know, and don't try and give you the whole kind of, well, when you have your own type thing, and just respect your decision and appreciate you and the value that you bring to their child's life regardless. It's very nice.
Totally. And co-sign and second that. And I think, you know, there's something I do say, which I think I've just learned from my parents, and like, you when you have a child, you'll know. And I'm like, yeah, but for now, I don't. And let's be honest, parents, that's not something you want me to plant on your doorstep in the next few years. But it doesn't mean that there's something about this bond or this this maternal bond which makes it the be-all and the end-all and the know-all of advice and being a wise old sage and being able to give you the correct advice in your life, which is not actually true. Like, we spoke a lot about friendships and squad goals and having a great team around you to push you and inspire you. And then let's not even get into, if you don't have a good relationship with your mother or your father, like, where you're finding your sources of inspiration and influence from. So it's not that you have to be a parent to know how to give knowledge and advice and support someone.
Yeah.
You know, you can achieve it by being a mentor, by being a great friend, by still having that person's back and, like, being, you know, being something or someone they can refer to as home and that safe space and where they get some dope-ass information from. Also, like, you don't always want your parents to be telling you shit. You
know? Exactly. It's just important.
You don't always want it to come from mum or dad.
Yeah.
So, yeah, second that, like, and to which we know, like, of course, me and Bangs are privy to some very, privy to some information here. I know who you're talking about, and I know that father, and it's just, like, for that child to be great already with their pops,
just great people to begin with, but
exactly. Yeah. But I have, knowing that person, have seen them grow as well through, like, knowing you, knowing myself, and like, that's that support. That's that it takes a village.
Yeah,
because there are certain things in your life, I think, that your parents know how great and fantastic they are, and there's a when they let go of the hand, like who else is gonna carry you through?
Yeah.
So there is a huge benefit to what you're saying, you know.
Yeah.
To being the non-parent, to being the mentor, to being someone other than your mother and father, to just be like, hey, yeah. I got you, like, yeah. you know. So yeah, I second that. Yeah. I co-sign that.
I could really talk about this topic all day, but let's.
I think it may have to be a future one.
Like
we need to make it a future one because, like, from what Bangs and I have spoken to, spoken about, I was gonna say behind the scenes, like we're in some big major production of a show. Like I'm sitting in my green chair, and you're sitting in your dream chair, and I leave, you know, be like, Ashley, what's your opinion? There's something about parenting. That we probably do need to address. I talk about it a lot in reference, like, to have it shape my worldviews to today, and now we're talking about, well, you don't have to be a parent to be able to support someone. So, you know, and this is like the open call, and we'll think on it too. Like, if there's advice or some real talk in parenting that needs to be done, because let's be honest, you know, anyone can have a child, but not anyone can be a parent. Mm. And I'm coming at it from that angle and shit I have seen. But yeah, we'll save that for another day because we got.
We're diving in.
Let's dive in. Listen, today I'm calling this one, and I forget the artist who has this song. It's some old banger like Magic FM days, but it's you probably think this song is about you. It's not. It's not. You know, let me just come out with you the quickness. You probably think this song is about you, and it's not. And it is in reference. I mean, listen, Beyoncé changed the world a week and a bit ago when she released Lemonade. Not only the audio album, but the visual masterpiece with all of the beautiful goodness to accompany her very, very brilliant sounding album. And in context of what you were saying about people hold back on your opinions, don't just, you know, fire from the hip and be first to comment on something without letting it simmer, without diluting it and then being able to offer a well-constructed critique into the world. But then also know your place, right? Mm. And I'm coming at this from understanding or, you know, understanding, I use that very loosely, Piers Morgan's retort to Beyoncé's Lemonade. You know, she's the militant. She's this Afro-styled haired woman. She's, you know, being too black. She's not palatable for your whiteness or the safeness which she once occupied because now she's coming out with a doo-doo-opti and, like, hitting you over the head with all of these things. But this, I go back to the title, you probably think this song is about you. It's not.
Mm.
It's not. It's not. And I'm not afraid to say, like, to be honest, Piers Morgan, it's not for the majority of the white population to kind of understand how Beyoncé is negotiating and constructing her blackness through her work of late. And then what it actually means to display that at such a high level. But it's one of the conversations I'm always kind of like in the back of my head of the dynamic between being a celebrity, but being a black celebrity and for your race and the point at which your class kind of like takes away your most salient point about you. And that's a whole nother conversation, but it's not about you. Everything that she's doing with this body of work, and I, you know, one of the better opinion pieces that I've read was like, it's about her legacy of maybe what she's passing on to her daughter, maybe what she's experienced from her mother, and not so much reconnecting with her southern roots, but making that at the forefront. And I'm reminded of it, like, and I got to this this train of thought through reading whatever the fuck Piers Morgan had to say about it, like, and of course not even white splaining, but inserting yourself into a debate that doesn't fucking concern you, number one. But a few other interactions I've had with people who are just like trying maybe to get through me the critical analysis or the line notes as to what this album means and struggling for meaning, because you know what, it just doesn't fucking appeal to, it's not for you. I remember when Formation dropped and I was in a public space, someone was like, I don't get it. What? No, I don't want you as a non-POC to be singing that, you know, you like your Jackson 5 nostrils or you want your baby hair with baby hairs and afro. Like, that's not for you. And she's doing that on purpose. I think in the context of what we're talking about to do with Beyonce, like, it's people take a back seat. And I'm getting it to the context of taking a back seat, realizing what is for your entertainment versus others and uplifting it may be given to others that you may not get. And also throwing that in there, being a good fucking ally, yeah? And it's not to say that non-people of colour cannot support Black Lives Matter or understanding or trying to understand and negate what it means to have a person of colour experience today and in the past and whatnot. Like, in whichever strand of history you've seen, there have been allies outside of, and I'm using inverted commas, you can't see it, race, because I believe it to be a social construct, as salient as it is, but there have been good allies. But the part of being an ally, to me, like, it's supporting, but knowing when to shut the fuck up. So it again relates to the point of it's not about you. So I don't want to hear it about you when it's a subject matter dealing with me, when you should be taking a seat to the side and just letting someone else come into fore. And I'm going to stop because this is
draw breath.
I'm going to get off the soapbox. It's from Beyonce to Kendrick Lamar's Grammy performance to what certain lyrics he has pertained to, like, maybe just a criticism of Black art throughout the spectrums of what these type of artists offer. And I'm just here to say, like, sometimes it's not about you.
I think, especially when it comes to, just to backtrack to Piers Morgan specifically, and Piers Morgan and the very, very many white tears which have been cried since Beyoncé released Formation. Isn't it just really the ultimate in white privilege to be like, well, I don't get it, so it's bullshit. First of all, Piers, sit the fuck down. I don't think Beyonce was in the studio cooking up some tunes, being like, wait a minute, guys, I don't think Piers Morgan's going to get it, so let's regroup.
I don't think Piers is going to get it. So you know what? Like, scrap that.
And I think as a white person who is lucky enough to have friends who are people of colour, and I'm lucky enough to be privy to those conversations and also just smart enough to know when to sit down and shut the fuck up and listen. I think what's interesting is, you know, for white people, everything is always aimed at us. So for Piers, being, you know, the living embodiment of privilege, white privilege in particular, it's so far outside of his wheelhouse that someone would dare to make something that doesn't speak to him, that it doesn't even compute for him, doesn't even register. It doesn't, it's not for me, then it's bullshit. Then I don't, like, no, Beyonce's wrong. I'll say for me, and please don't at me, Beyonce fans.
Wait, because when the beehive comes coming.
Yeah, no, it's serious.
Anyway.
But, you know, listen, I've always thought Beyonce, obviously, very talented, very beautiful woman. But I was never really like, the whole beehive thing, crazy, fanatical fandom for Beyonce, I never really got it. I kind of, you know, yeah, of course she makes a good tune, I dance around to it, whatever, whatever. But I always thought it kind of lacked substance a little bit. And I'm actually really enjoying this iteration of Beyonce because she's about something now. You know what I mean? And that's fine that it's her not discovering her blackness. She's been black, people.
And this
she
is the thing.
Been black.
This is the thing. Time. Like, it's not, and I'm so glad you raised that point, is that people saying, oh my God, she discovered a black. Like, it's not like she woke up in the morning and was like, you know, turn my swag on, let me turn this blackness on. She's been a Southern black woman who's always, I believe, like, in some capacity, been proud of her roots and her heritage. And she can't ignore the strength and, like, you're talking about traditions upon traditions, and you kind of you saw it in a formation video of that Southern Black Belle womanhood, and what, you know, that little, I think, nod to like seance and perhaps voodooism that she was getting out. She's been that. I credit a lot with this her team. Because, and I've noticed this exact change that you've seen in her. Like I said, like, you know, bum Beyonce, get it, rate it. But it wasn't until the last album and this album that I've just been like, oh, right. Hello.
Now you're saying something.
Yeah. And this is the thing, like, I didn't want to buy into her just for the sake of like the hype, or I need to support her because she can do well without my support, thoughts and opinions, or my, you know, $200 for a concert ticket. But it's that what I'm trying to say here is like, and maybe it's the, is it a peril? But it's this accountability that you may hold a black celebrity to, especially in these times, or when you're seeing what is happening to the black body at so many levels, and how it's being,
like, how,
you know,
can, as an artist, how is she expected to not talk about that?
Exactly.
When you think of when Destiny's Child came out, late 90s, it was a very bouncy era. Like, no
right.
black artists were really
right.
touching on that on a really
right.
serious level.
And if they were, you know, this wasn't, it wasn't
mainstream. You didn't have anybody on her
exactly.
level.
Black Lives Matter wasn't a mainstream issue as yet. And the people, you know, don't at me. I'm not saying that just because we have this this movement in the last couple of years that it wasn't happening before. I know that.
Yeah, of course.
But now, you know, we are talking mainstream popular culture now. Now you cannot escape the hashtag. Now there's a greater level, I think, of accountability because we've been hit over the head with all of the destruction that is being done.
But it's
to,
the, and it, well, it's that. It's the fact that look what's happening in society.
Exactly.
And that's a responsibility of any artist in any era.
Exactly.
Is to reflect and,
you know,
and speak on what's going on in that. And then when
right.
you look at Beyoncé's personal life, the fact that she's become a mother, her life has changed right. somewhat. Her perspectives on things are going to change when she sees, you know, the killing of Trayvon Martin.
Or Sandra Bland. Like, you got,
yeah,
like, Obama did it and people dragged him. She's doing it. You're thinking of who's underneath you, and
yeah.
you're thinking of your children, your legacy. Like, what the fuck? We're not inescapable from this. And I think that's the point I think she's at now.
I think,
like,
it'd be really irresponsible of her to not discuss any of these issues in musical form at this
and
point.
I know,
you know?
I know, like, harking it back, and it's a discussion I had the other day, and I think this is perhaps where class comes into it. And that's a monolith on its own of, like, how can you stand, how can you be at the forefront of this? You know, if we compare it, if we could, to the 1960s, and I'm thinking, I know, you know, Harry Belafonte comes out a lot against Jay-Z and Beyonce, like, and other theorists of that time, entrenched in, like, social, political black thought, like, these are not our people, like, I marched and they're not marching, and because they have to do it in different ways.
Yeah.
They have to. The game has changed somewhat in the mode, I believe, of activism, and knowing that we have now these social tools at our disposal. And it's not saying the fight is over. It's not saying we have overcome, but it's how they're going to challenge it through the levels of access they have. So she, to me, cannot be silent about something like this anymore. And I think it's a great trajectory so far of I wouldn't say, like, again, like, embracing her womanhood, because she's always done that. But from the last album to be like, you know, I'm a feminist and I'm going to make an album which is an ode to me and my body and me and my husband and what we do. And, like, everybody take this, because you can celebrate your body and you can, you know, appreciate its sexual prowess on your own or with your partner, and you can still be called a feminist. And people come in there because she doesn't represent all women. All right, boom, here's your album, innit? Like, now we come out honouring, again, its blackness, speaking on the subject of infidelity, which is, after the last album to this one, is, like, again, bearing her soul and knowing, I think, she has to really stand for something in these times. Like, we talk a lot about, outside of this topic, of what authenticity is and what that means, and you know, telling your truth, and here she is doing it through a visual aesthetic. And I think this is what people are going in on a lot, right? Her visual aesthetic of how she's constructed those videos, which are, even though I say bun Oscars, like all cinematic praise award worthy, because the nuance presented in them is just ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And it's like, I've been obsessed, you know, like watching it over and over and over, like trying to then pull out the cues, which I may not get as a Black British woman, which a Black Southerner does, but what she's really, really trying to proclaim here. And you said it as well, like bringing white privilege into it, like as it is that the privilege, sorry, of ignorance to a certain extent, but also the privilege of not seeing yourself as the other and knowing that wherever you go, your image and your likeness is reflected in you.
Yeah.
So sorry, not sorry for finally seeing a piece of work by one of the biggest superstars that we have and feeling very connected to that work. If I can't even get the subtleties, but the actual reflection. And, you know, I very rarely talk about my 9-to-5, but if I do branding and a bit of marketing and what I'm seeing, what I daily see, which really, you know, fucking upsets me, is that I'm never the person marketed to. Mm. I'm never the person in the advertisement, rarely. And just, you know, it's funny how I grew up, like, my dad's always been like, you know, you remember the world doesn't see you as a consumer, Lamara. And I never knew what that meant until I hit like 20, 21, in that apparently people of color don't buy toilet paper. We're not at McDonald's, or maybe we are, or we're not in, you know, buying TVs at Curry's, or we're not on Car Phone Warehouse adverts. Mm. We're definitely not driving the Benz.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, do this test, like sit in front of your TV and fuck it, count how many people of color you see in adverts. Like, what that is shouting back at you is that you're not a consumer. You're not, and everyone is in this world. I mean, I'll give you the statistics about what, you know, the expenditure, particularly for African Americans, is in the 21st century. But everything shouts back at you and displays back at you that you are not here. You are not present. We're not marketing to you. We're not seeing you. We're not validating you through these channels. So to sit and see shit like that on TV, on billboards, to work and see like a total suction of that image really gets me, you know, and I'm pounding my heart. Y'all can't see it, but it gets me. And I'm probably going off topic here, but like, I wrote a piece about South by Southwest, aka South by Southwhite, and just being, I felt, completely ignored or minimalized, dare I say, invisible in this space. If we're talking about the future and you're not kind of like putting or understanding the way the color of the world's going to change, again, leaving me invisible and not seeing me in these spaces, from a music video to a TV advertisement and otherizing me in places that you do, fuck it, that's white privilege in all of these spaces. And the clap, like, not the clapback, the pushback that I have to these people that don't get it is like, God, let us have something. Jesus, we're not seeing ourselves reflected in these places a lot, you know, and versus overly seeing yourself. And it matters on so many levels, the nuance of which she's bringing out on her work, but then just also to have that body of work and have it speak to Black womanhood in that way, in itself, fuck it, is a revolutionary act. And I'm very for representation, as you can tell. I'm very for representation. I have, you know, younger sister, I have younger nieces who are coming up and already have these conversations with me. Like, someone said something about me being a different colour at school today, Lem. Or, you know, what about my hair? Like, I can't get my hair straight. Or, you know, someone called me out on this. And I'm just like, shit, like, there needs to be more things they see. That's why we, you know, me personally will clap when I see a Beyonce album, when, you know, the TV cartoon Doc McStuffins has come out, you know, which is freaking dope and like a very good form of therapy. When, like, you know, you have people like Amanda Steinberg, you know, writing and directing and and Zendaya like clapping back on internet and reclaiming a lot of shit about us because our image is now in the world and people are going to try and tell us it's different when we really know what it is. Again, I will dismount from my soapbox to let you come in so we're having a conversation, but it's pre-Beyonce, it's with Beyonce, and it's post-Beyonce of what it means, like when something's not for you and how you criticize that, knowing that, yeah, it's not fucking for you, bro. Like, I think let's make this a conversation. Well,
excuse me, sorry. I think the problem is, at the moment, what we're seeing in pop culture when there's, megastars like Beyonce, and Kendrick Lamar's incredible Grammy performance, which again was clearly not for us as white people. But let me tell you, as a white person, I sat back and watched that performance and was blown away. And, you know, I'm never going to understand his experience as a black man, but I appreciate so much his art and his storytelling and the way he expresses his experience, which again is never going to make me understand it and me feel it, but it helps me get there. You know what I mean? It helps me be like, okay, I'm not going to sit in my little bubble of ignorance. I want to listen to the way you walk through the world and experience it and how that differs from me. And I like to think there's a lot of white people who think the same as me, but then I look at the internet and my hopes are dashed. But like, you know, I see kind of the reaction to Beyonce's album, but especially when Formation came out and, you know, people calling her, oh, she's racist, and which I don't, there's not enough hours in the day for me to explain how black people can't be racist.
Like, thank you.
There's not enough hours in the day for me to explain that. But
not enough hours in the day, people ain't got enough patience, but
what's sad about it is that those people who are saying that, unfortunately, I feel, are never going to be the type of people who are going to sit down and listen to a rational, logical argument about that for their viewpoint to be changed. I kind of feel the same at the moment, unfortunately, about Trump supporters. You know, write all the think pieces you want about Trump. Go ahead, have at it. But the people who need to hear that are not going to be reading that. That's not the audience. You know what I mean? So it doesn't matter. You can keep writing it. You can keep... Absolutely, cool. But there's not a Trump supporter out there who will sit down, read that and think, that's logical. Sure, yeah, I'm actually not going to vote for Trump. It's just not going to happen. And I feel the same way about people who are kind of like dismissive of, I was going to say the latest version of Beyonce, which is not the way I want to phrase it, but...
I get where you're coming from.
But you know what I'm trying to say.
Like, Beyonce 2.0, yo.
Right, you know what I mean? Like, who are just kind of like, oh, she's really radical and... Oh, she's really radical and she's really black. Like, she's, as I said before, she's been black. And I think it would be, as I said before, really irresponsible of her as an artist, as a woman, as a black woman, as a functioning member of society to not address a lot of the shit that's going on here. And I think it's really annoying slash dangerous that there's a section of white people out there who just, the second... an artist, particularly a black artist, starts speaking about political issues and things like Black Lives Matter, this segment of society, white society, that just dismisses it. Well, no, you've gone all black now, so no, it doesn't matter. It's not relevant to me. I'm just going to shut down. I'm not going to listen to it. So, how do we progress if you're not ever going to, if you're not willing to sit and listen and hear that argument and listen, and just listen to somebody's experience. Here's another point I want to make is kind of not in defense of stupid white people, but to a degree. You know, I'm very lucky to have been brought up very multiculturally, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of us who grew up in major metropolises often take that for granted. But not even just grew up in a metropolis, but did actually interact with people of different races. There's a difference because there's a lot of people who grow up in a city and just stay in their own little corner and never interact with anybody of any other race. But I think Especially if, you know, if you look at England, we're, you know, the people in the cities, obviously it's very multicultural. We have interactions with people of different races every day. But if you're out in the sticks somewhere, same thing with the States, like if you're out in the sticks somewhere and you never encounter a black person or a person of colour or, you know, your experience is, say like, you know, frat boys who love to use the N-word, right? They have, they, which I'm not defending at all, by the way, but I never use that word and wouldn't use that word, and I've listened to hip hop my whole life. But there's, you got these frat boys who will use it because they listen to Snoop Dogg all the time, but they've never actually encountered a genuine real life black person to have an understanding of the fact that it's actually really fucking offensive and it's not for you. It's not your word. And no, your privilege as a white person does not mean that you get to use it. It's just not for you. Just accept it. And I can't bear to listen to those arguments that white boys in particular, it always seems to be, love to make about how they should have the right to use the word. Like, if you actually listened, just shut the fuck up and listen to the other side about how, if, listen, they, black people are specifically, explicitly telling you this is not okay for you to use. So you don't get to come back and be like, actually, I'm going to use it anyway. No, you don't. You don't
get
to
privilege.
Do that. That's privilege. Yeah.
I think there's a brilliant, article by Talib Kweli entitled N asterisk, please. And just basically the defense and like the real, I liken it to like, you know, a child who won't let their teddy bear go. Like,
like why must you say it?
To use this word. Why? Have it.
Why must you say it?
Really,
why?
Really, really basic argument. Well, if you say it, why can't I say it? Because it's fucking different, bro.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Like, why are you trying to hold on to a word that isn't about you or for you?
You?
And what does it say that you want to hold on to that word to be able to you know, say it in the context of rap? Sure, side eye. Or out the context of rap. There's all these passes, all these blies that, you know, certain white people are looking at with this word particularly. Like, if you say it, we can say it. No. Well, but like, you know, like, I don't mean anything negative or bad, or I'm not coming for you, Lamar, if I call you that word. It still doesn't sit right with me. I take issue at black people that call me that word.
But
I do, and
like,
I have parts, but it's like...
For white people who want to use that word so badly, you're so desperate to be part of that culture.
Exactly.
Then,
you can do it in 20 million other ways without saying that word, but like I said, what the fuck does it say about you wanting to... I want to say this
exactly.
Because it's the most important word.
Yeah. But then my thing is, like, cool, you really want to be part of the culture. Really, so black culture is that important to you. So where are you at the Black Lives Matter marches then? Do you know what I mean? Like, how are you... contributing to this culture in any other way? You just want to take that part of it because you're being explicitly told it's not for you. And what bothers me about circling back around to Beyonce, kind of bringing her back in, and people like Piers Morgan who just kind of dismiss her work as like, oh, you're too black now, so it doesn't matter, we're not going to listen. What's offensive about it, and what I wish that, you know, people who are crying all of the white tears about it would understand, is you're basically relegating black people and their experience into non-existence. Like, no, you don't get to talk about that. And especially when it comes to Beyonce, because her platform is so big. Like, oh, no, we don't want to hear about your hardships. We don't want
to
hear
because
that makes us uncomfortable. But when
she was palatable,
because she wasn't saying anything. She was vacuous.
She was safe. And it's reminded, like, it's something you said earlier, like the militant and the activist. Like, whenever, to a certain extent, we're never given the benefit of nuance. Or like the sliding scale of how things happen is either we just get hit in the hyper.
Yeah.
We get hit in the hyper. Hillary and Bill Clinton said it. Those predators, those hyper predators, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm reminded also of how we're just everything is tenfold and ramped up, and it becomes unpalatable to you, it becomes unsafe to you because it's not an image you can control. It's not an image that sits safe with you. I'm also here thinking about like the, again with that the control and what is what is deemed safe for white people, like Melissa Harris-Perry, like a great fucking critic on TV, a great academic, someone who I still admire, who just gets it, like a whole breadth of conversation of what was going on in America. Today, had a show on MSNBC and it got pulled. It got pulled in a very disastrous way. And little by little, week by week, she was just noting how they were changing the format of her show, losing all the great things about it, losing all the things that, you know, it had become, like this space for great black social political thought and for engaging nuanced discussions, and it got yanked. And she wrote a letter and it was like, something, 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 I am not your mammy. You know, shit, ooh, hit them with it. You know, I am not that safe, malleable, very maternal, giving everything to white people person that you want me to be. And you know what? I have fucking agency. So I'm you're going to take my show. I'm going to leave. Like, I'm not going to work for you under these conditions which make you feel safe. This is the thing, and it works on this level, you know, and I see everything as like the micro and the macro of what we're really talking about. Like, it became unpalatable. She's started to, dare I say, be a woman with opinions, number one, which maybe people don't like. Then she's talking about a subject matter which is close to her and millions of people, not just her sole target audience that listens to her music, but as a wider social conversation of what's going on in the world today. That makes people feel uncomfortable. Sorry, you feel fucking uncomfortable. You have to deal with it.
Well, but and it's also white people, especially in America, love to think there's not a race problem. So,
oh, Jesus.
You know, so the fact that she's now talking about race quite explicitly, where I think genuinely, well, I don't think this was, you know, Piers Morgan was trying to make this point in his piece, where he was talking about how Beyonce kind of used to talk about how she likes that people don't, quote unquote, see her color, which is a terrible turn of phrase. So I think that now that Beyonce is referring to her blackness, it makes white people uncomfortable because, you know, to them, especially in the States, there is no race problem. So it's kind of, and I think especially because they were already thinking that, because, you know, what with Obama and all, it's post-racial.
Obviously.
So, you know, the more kind of the Black Lives Matter movement has grown, I think there's a growing group, as we can see, obviously, from the massive number of Trump supporters who obviously have this way of thinking. It's a growing group who are just kind of like, oh, but there wasn't a race issue. And that because Obama, and now Black Lives Matter. You're like creating this thing because we didn't have a race issue. And so now you're creating this thing and you're talking about race all the time. So now
and
Beyonce.
You're adding to it.
So
and
Beyonce,
you're causing riots, right, and you're anti-police and you're all of these things. And I'm just like, girl, bye.
And now
girl,
Beyonce releases this album where she's really, you know, she's unapologetically black and just doing her thing. And so white people retreat even more, like, you're not allowed to talk about that because to us, you're not black. You were very much like this kind of colorless super being that we could all relate to when you were being really vacuous and
right,
not really talking about anything.
And here's the thing, like, and if it hasn't come out explicitly enough, I'm not saying, like, all white people don't get Beyonce. This is my point I want to bring into, like, what it takes to be a good ally. Because I'm not, you know, like, oh, Jesus. It's always, you know, sometimes when I feel like I say not all white people, I'm the person saying I have a black friend and trying to defend white. I really feel like they're like, I have white friends. Some of my best friends are white. You know, I spoke to a white girl once, you know, yeah. Like.
You speak to this one every week. Hey.
Yeah. Brethren. But what it takes to be a good ally, you know, it's actually more listening than speaking. It's actually being innocent in the way you're talking to a person rather than coming at it from a position of ignorance. Like, you know, I get shut down when people come at me with the dumb shit. It's things knowing that your privilege and, hey, here, do some homework. People, if you want to understand what white privilege is in a very easy way, there's a great article that exists on the internet called, I think it's the 42 or 46 42 or 46 Elements of White Privilege. I've butchered the title, but it's by someone called Peggy McIntosh. It's a long list, and basically she notes every way in which her whiteness is made palatable, which her whiteness is accepted in society. Everything from, like, having the same color Band-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
Plaster, sorry, I'm getting American on you. Having this, you know, knowing that I can, you know, go and get tights and they fit my skin color.
Flesh-colored tights, which are flesh always for tights. White people. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's why I use them on my head a lot. But those are, if you want to talk about privilege and it being a big word, like, that is a very good article to just check yourself in social interactions or check yourself in the world around you and kind of open up your eyes a little bit more that things are accessed to you and restricted for me, if I'm talking about myself, right? So, and then it comes into, like, being a good ally. So checking your privilege and being a good ally is listening more than you're talking, as I said. It's also, like I said, understanding your privilege and the back foot you're coming at for this. It's entering into a very innocent dialogue where, again, you're listening, but I'm talking to you, and hopefully we're having or hitting in the middle this understanding. It's not hitting me with ignorance. Like, that's bullshit. Your experiences are nothing. You know, because, like we've always said, we're here to have these conversations.
Yeah.
I'm here to have them. I'm not shutting them down. But
you've got to listen to it. You've got to be open to it and hear what's happening.
Research, you know. You gotta, like, you know, be at the rally, but be reading a fucking book at the side, or just knowing, like, yo, I want to enter into this debate because I actually feel like in society it privileges me more than it does you. And how can I know for myself I need to, like, act to change that imbalance and create a new status quo? How can I do that?
Yeah.
That's being an ally. And I think that's where you get people who, on one hand, don't get this fucking conversation because now she's changed and now she's not for you. But then you do get white people up here. It's like, you know, it's not actually meant to be for us, and here are the reasons why.
Right.
And, like, I'm okay with that. And
I don't need to understand who Becky is. I don't need to understand the hot sauce thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's okay. Like, if you don't get it, like, some shit just is not for you. And actually, I just need to drop in really quickly. I don't know if you would have seen this past week, possibly the most epic fuck-ups of all time came from Glamour UK magazine, who were doing a thing about, because, you know, obviously the internet has been ablaze with talk of who is Becky with the good hair, like everybody trying to dissect this line. So Glamour UK took it upon themselves to explain what a Becky is and did this whole thing about good hair versus black hair, basically, which was
I think I saw the tweet was deleted,
mate. They posted that link and they had to retract that shit triple
now,
time
now,
like
this is
so
the thing.
Quickly
now,
wait,
oh my bad.
So they obviously got inundated with tweets because somebody managed to screen grab some of the things from the actual article, which is And it was, I read it and cringed, like, beyond belief as a white person, where basically it was really just like, here's why white people's hair is considered good hair. Here's why black people's hair. It was honest to God, like, on that kind of level, which makes me think first of all, who the fuck would, how many things did this go through before someone was like, oh, yeah, cool, let's write that.
It could never be enough because it's fucking ignorant.
No, exactly. And it also highlights the fact that, Glamour, you clearly have no diversity in your office, because I know if you had even but one black girl working in there, that article would never have gone up in a million years. So Glamour have got to, listen, get your mind right, act right, and shut the fuck up. Like, you don't have to write, this is another thing, like, Glamour, clearly a magazine for white women, let's be real. You don't get to have an opinion on that. Do you know what I'm saying? You actually don't get to have an opinion on that. And this is another thing I can't stand, where it's like, you just, again, as I was saying in terms of, you know, calling bullshit earlier in the show, just this rush to, like, have an opinion on some shit. It's like, but Glamour, you have no understanding of what that term means. You have made no effort to learn about what that term means. And if you have, so you've done so in a very primitive sense and had a white girl write it, and it's offensive and you should never have done it, and it was a really bad fucking choice. And please, just side note, hire some people of colour, please. Jesus.
Listen, Listen, like, well,
okay, sorry.
Well, if that's not like the greatest, one of the greatest examples of white splaining, then Jesus.
Oh my God, it was.
God knows what it is.
That will go like, in some like museum.
Hiring people of color in these spaces is. I feel like we've got two new podcast episodes coming on.
Honestly.
But I co-sign. But that's some bullshit. Like, I've read a think piece. There's a Fusion piece, I believe, up
just
about...
Just the one. Like, you've read just the one about Becky, have you? Because let me tell you, there's roughly 4,872,904.
There's plenty. I've read one so far. I've also seen, you know... People like Iggy Azalea be like, "That's racist." I've had people come out to be like, "What does Becky with the good hair mean?" And I just give them the face like,
"But Namara, you represent all black people."
Exactly. Oh,
please, do you not know this?
$10,000 answer. Oh, because like, oh, you're black, you get it, you know, you're my encyclopedia for black knowledge.
You have to answer all our questions about the blacks.
Exactly. Not only do you have to answer all the questions, you know it because you live in Blacktopia every day, Lamara. And you know, you can just pick up your phone and call Beyonce and be like, "Girl, what do you want me to tell these people?" Like, again, this is going into like definitely another episode that we need to cover of like being the only one or being the most accessible one, which now has to, and this is what I felt post Beyonce of like, how much shit do I have to explain now? Okay, I'm just sitting there tapping my foot. Yeah. You know, someone came to me and was like, "Well, have you read everything?" And I lied. I said, What do you think? And I said, "I think it's a great music album." And I was being ignorant because I know the next thing that is going to come out of that person's mouth is they're gonna take notes verbatim of what I'm saying and know that they've asked Lamara, the only black person they know, and now what she says, "No, I'm not doing that for you.
Yeah,
I'm not. I'm fed up with doing that.
Yeah,
that's not how it should be.
Yeah.
You know, again, if you want to be an ally, come at me a bit correctly.
Yeah.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph,
or
as I heard this week, Jesus wept on a bicycle riding backwards.
That's quite the visual.
Love stuff like that. I love it. It's just my brain. But yeah,
All right, that was, okay.
I mean, pre-Beyonce, this came for understanding Bangs and I's dynamic of like how we've talked about race in the past and how from you, it, like, in the conversations we've ever had, I've never felt like you didn't fucking get it or you weren't trying to learn. And we ages ago were speaking like, you know, well, not understanding ourselves in isolation, but we have this conversation and we have this dynamic about a lot of things. And I've never felt offended. I've never felt like you didn't want to know. And like, I'm coming at this talking to you, like not trying to impose, like, these are my rules for which we must enter these conversations. But we've just always been really fluid and honest with shit like this.
Yeah.
And my interaction with you, as it's with a lot of my other white friends, is never, it's very rarely been like the ignorance comes first.
Yeah.
It's never been like, you just want my opinion and to satisfy and answer all your questions.
Yeah.
So we've always thought about doing this episode in terms of like, how the fuck do we talk about our friendship again and things that we talk about that we actually fucking vibe on a lot, you know, and understanding like how you've grown up, you know, your mates and where you've coming from in Leeds and like how I've grown up and, you know, how my mates and the schools I went to and like the thought I have that's been instilled with me and I read and yada, 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 yada. And we come together and we're like, and again, we're not your Benetton advert people. Like, note that, like, we're not your Benetton advert, but there's a way in which I hope you've listened and kind of understood that there's a way to talk about race between two people of opposite races, which understands privilege and doesn't take away maybe the agency or leave all the explaining for one person to do. Like, this conversation, this interaction, if everything we've said is like talking more and bridging a gap more, it can happen. It's not an easy conversation. It's a very uncomfortable conversation. There's a lot of things that will get learnt and unlearnt in the process of this conversation. But that's to say, like, we've always thought this amongst ourselves, pre-podcast, post-podcast, then Beyonce dropped her shit. And we're like, actually, what we need to do is have a larger conversation about white privilege, about being an ally, and as of the mainstream and the otherness through her body of work, which I hope we've done. If we haven't, it's always just dope to fucking
you as well. I want to just, I think I'll kind of sum off with something that you said. I don't think it was actually just in private conversation between the two of us, but that actually really stuck with me because I had never really considered it that way before. But we were having a discussion about race, and I think you were talking about somebody who does always come to you as like the token black girl in your situation and tries to ask you questions. And I think you had mentioned somebody saying to you about how they don't see color. And now I've heard white people use this phrase all of my life. I've heard that. And I've always been like, bullshit, whatever. I've always thought that's mad ignorant, but I never thought about the actual impact of someone saying that until you said the following to me. You said that it really bothers me when people say that, because that means you can't see me. And that, when you said that, it was like, I felt like I got punched in my solar plexus. You know, it's just like, it hurt that you have felt that. You know what I mean? Like, I hurt for you because I thought, oh God, I can't even imagine that feeling. And people use that phrase so often. And so I just kind of wanted to end on that, just in terms of as Lamara was saying, we have conversations about race and stuff all the time, and I can think that I'm really enlightened and quote unquote woke, as people like to say these days, and sure, I can go ahead and think that, but I learn every day from Lamara and others, mainly through shutting the fuck up and just listening to what people have to say, you know what I mean? And that's on issues of race, gender, sexuality, whatever the fuck it is. If someone is coming from a different perspective from you, it's your responsibility as a decent functioning human member of society to listen and try and gain an understanding of that. That's my point.
Yes. As I'm imitating, let me do my Obama impression of late. Two fingers to the lips, mic drop.
Mic drop for sure. Yes.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. Awesome. We went in. That's filled your 2-week drought, people.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. Obviously, let us know what you think on all that. Oh, wait, hang on. Have you got some words of wisdom?
Have you?
Sure do.
All right, I have some words of wisdom.
Do it.
Basically, it's a quote I picked up reading this week, and it says, "There is no earthly reason for me to delay my good."
True. I say it again.
There is no earthly reason for me to delay my good. Shit. I mean, self-explanatory. Don't put off the thing that you're trying to put off. Don't be scared to take that chance or that risk. All of that stuff that maybe how you just dissect it and understand it is different to me. But time waits for no one. So fucking do it now, basically.
I like that. That's good. That's strong. That's a strong one. Mine would be...
you're smirking.
Because I know you're going to laugh already. But mine would be a little phrase that I've heard from many a West Indian parents in my life. If you do not hear, you must feel.
Yes!
That, which I think is...
Those who can hear must feel.
There you go.
Shivers. Yeah.
Like,
shivers.
I've heard that from many of my friends' parents growing up, and I think it's a freaking great phrase, first of all. I think it's just a really wonderful turn of phrase. But it's great. Yeah, if you cannot hear, you must feel, which I think you've either... felt that in your own life where where you've just ignored advice and then it's just you've got to feel the consequences of it, you know, and I've kind of been going through that with someone this week and was like, well, if you cannot hear, you must feel, and feel you will, so enjoy.
Yes, people, where can they find us at?
You can find us on the Twitter at No BS Guide to Life. We have a website, nobsguidetolife.com. We have other things, do we?
We're on iTunes. We exist on iTunes if that's your primary mode of listening to us.
Please subscribe, rate, review,
all of the good stuff. We also have a SoundCloud account, but
We're unsure about that right now. we're in talks about that.
Plot twist. we exist on Twitter. We exist on iTunes. We have a website. We're personally contactable. You can get me on the Twitter at Lemel P, I believe. Am I Lemel? I always get this wrong.
You're Lemel underscore P.
I'm Lemel underscore P.
Damn it.
At me. Get my bars.
You can get me everywhere online at Bangs in a Bun. And if you have any topic suggestions that you would like us to talk about, please email us nobsguidetolife@gmail.com.
Yeah, we're here, man. Like we're back.
And we're back now. We're stop fucking around. We're gonna be back with a new episode next week.
Most definitely.
You heard it here first.
Until then, yep, you heard it here first. Later.
Bye.
Peace.
Bye.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.